Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
I'm sorry. I have to issue an apology today. It was bound to happen sooner or later on a show where I throw my share of stones. If you're going to make it your business to criticize other people's work, you got to look at yourself as objectively as you can. And I made a misstep, and I want to be accountable for it. On last week's show, I thought I was doing something different. I thought I was, keeping it real or challenging a convention. I shouldn't have eaten pizza while interviewing. I don't think I took into consideration, a couple things. I didn't take into consideration how many of you listen to this show, not through speakers, but through headphones or even earbuds. I quickly found out from many of you that you don't need that. You don't want me chewing pizza in your ear. And I also didn't take into account how loudly I chew. So I'm sorry. It won't happen again. On the bright side, I also eat very quickly. So by the time I got to Graham Wagner, Catherine's boyfriend Graham, I had already eaten all of the pizza. There might be a crust that you'll hear me chewing on at some point, but there's really very little eating on today's episode. Graham Wagner is a talented comedian, comedy writer, improv comedian. He wrote for The Office, post-Carell, but still. Graham also wrote for Portlandia. But before all that, before Hollywood, he was a working comedian and comedy writer here. You may have seen him if you ever caught any of the Laugh Sabbath shows or the Comedy Bar or elsewhere. Guys like Nathan Fielder, who went on to do Nathan for You. He was there. A lot of funny people there. Really enjoy my talk with Graham about that and about what he's doing now. And I think you'll dig it too. Wait for it.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
The exclusive sponsor for this show is FreshBooks. Painless billing, cloud accounting at FreshBooks.com. I urge you to check it out.
Well, you're an interesting contrast. It's so interesting that you ended up together because you're like way more successful than she is, but like with none of the... I don't know you nearly as well. If there's the same burning thing, you hide it very well.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, the goal is like when you said, oh, you're very uncomplicated by comparison, it's like, oh... That's nice, and that's definitely an objective of mine. But, like, you know, everyone's complicated if you dig deep enough.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in northern Alberta, a town called Fort McMurray, which is the place where the Keystone Pipeline is happening.
So you grew up in Fort McMurray?
Yeah, yeah.
Before it was, like, Fort McMurray?
No, I mean, it's always been Fort McMurray. It's just been in the news more. It's been a boom town since the early 70s. Like, there's been oil there all along, and it's just been like more and more. As the internet came out, people knew how to talk about it better and sending inflammatory links about what an awful place it is. But it was even more awful 20 years ago because they didn't have any environmental filters whatsoever on what's going on. So yeah, it's always been the same town it is presently.
Growing up, like, was your family into comedy? Like, what? How did that even happen?
Yeah, it's funny.
I got a family of people who are jokers, and you know, you kind of sit quietly at the side while your uncles and aunts and grandma making funny jokes, and you're like, man, I'm gonna destroy you all one day. And,
different than the like precocious kid who's like me now. Like you were biding your time.
Yeah, I was biding my time. Yeah, and just quietly like I'm writing a little script, and you'll see. And yeah, so I don't think I ever had it in me to be like an actual star.
But you were performing as of the... Like you were doing improv shows as of 13 onwards.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the improv scene at Fort McMurray?
Well, we had a monopoly on it, so it was pretty easy. You know, like, and there was like these large oil companies there that were paying... You know, I was like crushing the kids who had a paper route because I was doing improv, and they'd pay us like, you know, $300 an hour to do improv shows.
For like corporate events?
Yeah, yeah. For like Lobster Boy. You know, so we'd do like two or three gigs a week, and I was earning an okay bit of money as a kid.
No, my impression having been there for like 48 hours is that
That's amazing that you've been there at all.
I have been there, and it struck me as the most... It felt, and this isn't like any kind of high horse I'm on about it, or like I don't know enough about it to have like a very formed political opinion of it. It's just an emotional reaction I had where I felt this is the most evil place I've ever been.
Well, it's a dark place. Like, I mean,
there's no reason for anyone to be here but money.
You know, it's fine for kids. Like, you know, you raise a kid in the suburbs here, you raise a kid in like Calabasas or Thousand Oaks. Like, those are also like...
yeah,
have a subtle kind of evilness about them in terms of how sterile they are. You know,
does a kid do you have like nostalgia for Fort McMurray? Do you have like a warm place in your heart?
I have like a kind of like, you know, how maybe people have a nostalgia for times of war, you know, like something where, you know, like it was simpler and cleaner in terms of like, there's just nothing and there's a austerity to it all.
And yeah. The big sky and
And the Northern Lights is like,
yeah,
hard to ignore, you know, like
was there some point of connection where like being funny with your family led to being a comedy geek? Like where are the cultural inputs there?
For me at that time, it was about being small. And being like
physically small.
Physically small and, you know, relatively egoless compared to a very macho town. So I was just like, oh, I'll pretend to be a woman. I don't give a shit. And everyone's like, holy, can you imagine, you know, taking your ego aside and humiliating yourself in this way? It's like, yeah, fuck it, you wanted me to wiggle around? This is like right around where like Jim Carrey was happening. So, and again, I'm like, whatever, 14 or so, and you just make funny faces and people freak out because they can't imagine, you know. So
that's like power though, like that's
it was a roundabout way to get power for sure. And the only power I could get, because is like I still go back to Alberta to this day and I'm like, shit, everyone's huge here, you know, like I would never have survived, like, you know.
The plane from Edmonton to Fort McMurray was like I was on an airplane with like,
and you're a big guy, but you're like, you like are small compared to these people.
There was a lot of man.
That's a burly kind of place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't feel like I had I felt like that was the only avenue to power, perhaps, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to psychoanalyze it, which I guess is what we're doing.
Did it connect with the world of comedy, though, is my question? Like, was there a point where you started to, like, be, like, a student of it all?
Yeah, no, I mean, I had obviously, like, most kids growing up in a house that is frozen 8 months of the year, I watched a lot of television, you know.
Yeah.
I watched my parents watch television and I was like, wow, they're sure paying attention to the television. You know, that obviously that's an impact on everybody, I'm sure. But yeah, you know, you stay up late and get to watch Saturday Night Live and you feel lucky or whatever. So that's obviously something you aspire to, and you see, you know, I don't think I ever aspired to radio. I don't think I read a lot of books as a kid, but I was still like, I didn't get to watch people appreciate books. I got to watch people appreciate television, because between Saturday Night Live and watching the live studio audience or live studio audiences of Cheers or whatever, or watching my parents like veg out in front of the TV every other night, I was like, oh, this seems like a good way to connect to people, you know. So by the time I went to University of Alberta, I studied political philosophy for a bit, and I was like, oh, this seems like only students are reading this stuff, and this is like very insular. So I went over to the television program at Ryerson, which is, you know, a very vain kid kind of thing at the time, which is like, I'll bring philosophy to the masses, which is like absolutely absurd.
Wait, you were like the philosophy comic?
Well, you know, like there's a big thing with like, I think all of the Monty Python guys had philosophy degrees. So that was, I think, part of why I was like, well, there's no playwriting course at U of A presently. There's like theater analysis or whatever. So, but I knew that I was 17 when I went to university. And at that point, you know, me and all my friends knew that the Monty Python guys all had philosophy degrees. So it seemed like the only degree in the book I looked through that I could see is like, oh, this connects to what I want to do.
I'm a Monty Python fan. I'm going to study philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, generally, I think there's a lot of, I encountered tons of comedy kids to this day who I still know doing comedy in the philosophy program at U of A.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, you don't have the Humber School of Comedy at that point. You don't have, if you're in Alberta, you don't have the Ryerson's television program. And even then, you're like, not sure that's for you, because there's a lot of sportscasters coming out of that school at that time.
But
then you dropped out. You didn't finish.
Of U of A.
No, and then also
both.
You don't have a college degree.
No, I've got 6 years of hanging around at colleges.
I know.
Because you started to work, because you got a development deal.
Yeah. I got like the taste of it.
This is like a 10-year period where you were kind of like up.
There were so few shows going around in Canada that I was pitching shows. I think I had like, I was in at Ryerson and I had like 4 development deals, and I thought this was it. To every little like notion I had was like being optioned for like $800 or whatever it was.
How did that happen? How did you get access to?
Oh, I went to Banff and Film and Television Festival. And I did the New Players Pitch, and I won that in the audience thing with
the New Players Pitch?
It's called the new player's pitch.
It's just like fresh faces.
Yeah, like people who have really no experience being invited to pitch in front of like an Olympic clock.
Yeah.
You've got like 2.5 minutes to like do your spiel. And
at that point, you had done a lot of time on stage and were confident.
Yeah, I mean, I've been performing since I was like 13. So it was like me and this other improv guy, Josh Dean, who's moved down here around when I moved to Toronto. We just got together and wrote the pitch on the drive down. And the thing was, there was a bunch of people who, you know, it was easy pickings. Like, we had done a lot of live comedy before, so we just went up, we just, two kids in suits got up and tried to play grown-up, and everyone was like, isn't this charming? We'll give them the little awards.
Yeah.
Like, little did they know that that would confuse us to the point where we're like, this is our career now.
Right.
Yeah, like, I really thought I was going to, you know.
You're like, standing before people with jobs and nice clothes. Yeah. And the construct is that they're choosing who's talented. Like, the talent police are here looking for talent, and they've chosen you. So
my first exposure to the industry generally was to speak to all of them at once.
You don't know that this is, like, what kind of executive they are or what they have to offer.
There's no, like, I couldn't search up what had happened to the last year winner and how he'd been presently eating dog food or whatever.
Addicted to heroin.
Yeah. So I was just like, this is it. I've won some kind of award that I heard about 6 weeks ago, and I won it. I think I'm the best. But, yeah, and after that, 10 years went by. You know, I was, like, picking up work now and again, writing for television and on shows that would just get canceled right away because it's typically the pattern. People give it a shot. But I forget what the question is because I've had three glasses of wine. But
I need a glass of wine. Tell me about, like, coming here and getting something happening.
I've been making trips down here over the years. I'd take little L.A. exploratory mission trips. So by the time we decided to move to L.A., you and I, basically, I had a job.
You had a goal. You had a 100 days left of Toronto.
Yeah. So I had written a thing like 100 days of Toronto and I'm done.
What does that mean?
I contracted the swine flu and was hospitalized shortly after I ended like a 6-year relationship. And I was like, Toronto sucks right now for me. So I've got 100 days of Toronto and I'm out. I've just got to raise $15,000 and I'll leave. I'll go to L.A.
Uh-huh.
And in that time, I landed a job on a CBC sitcom. So that technically took me out of Toronto. And I...
What show is that?
It was called Men with Brooms. It was like a short-lived...
I've heard of it.
Yeah. You know, CBC sitcom. So I basically was down to one day left in Toronto before my 100 days of Toronto were done. And I went off to Winnipeg. So in that time, I'd met Catherine and we had sort of developed this plan of moving to LA. So I had one day left. So I came back to Toronto after Winnipeg, writing on Men with Brooms, and packed up all of our things and we left. So we made it by the skin of our teeth, based on this, you know, kind of abstract,
round but arbitrary number of 100 days.
Yeah. So,
Toronto.
So we moved to LA and, a friend in LA knew that I was, moving and he just arranged for me to have a job, by the time I arrived. So I basically, we drove from Toronto to L.A. We're going to drive direct, but then we rerouted the trip.
Your friend called you when we were in Newton, Iowa.
Sure,
and he was like, I've left my job at The Life and Times of Tim, which was one of the two HBO animated shows they were doing, and Graham knows how to animate, and he's a good comedy writer, and his friend was like, you are the only person who I know who can animate and
edit,
write.
Yeah, sorry,
edit animation and write. And so we didn't go directly to LA. We stopped off in San Francisco, which was a detour, so that he could meet the person who had created the show.
Yeah.
And I went and got my haircut, and you went and met with Steve, who is the creator of The Life and Times of Tim.
Yeah.
And you had a job by the time we got to LA.
Yeah. So it's not customary, but it's also not customary for people to like dabble in LA for 4 years, like for 3 months a year, you know? So I can make it sound as though, like, I got a job the second I arrived, but the reality is,
it's like the 10 years of work that go into the overnight success thing. It's like, it's been good to, like...
Yeah, and I have no interest in, like,
get in a car with your girlfriend to go to L.A. to see if it works out and have a job waiting for you when you get there. And yet there's a lot that went into that.
And a lot of times, I think that people with their L.A. stories want to sell the myth on, like, bada bing, bada boom, I'd made it. You know, the Bob Evans kind of take. But the reality is, like, I'd put in a lot of time down here and, like, a lot of people and... The guy who recommended me for the job, I'd co-written a script with him that both of us to this day think is like really lovely and never sold for a bunch of contractual reasons. But so it wasn't like a total in the dark experience.
You know?
It looked good on paper.
It looks good on paper.
We were grapes of wrathing it across America, and you got the call, and so by the time we arrived, but yeah, it was...
Yeah, it was like,
this is like 5 years ago? How long?
Three and a half. Three years ago, in 1 month.
In 3 years, so that you started with an HBO show.
I was on the last season of The Life and Times of Tim, and I got shuttled over to the last season of The Office.
Yeah.
And then, thankfully, not the last season of Portlandia. It's the fourth season.
The fourth season of Portlandia.
Yeah, and they've got at least one more coming after this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're pitching your own stuff.
Yeah, and then I, based
you
on...
You sold 2 shows to NBC this year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these are some of the, like, kind of most loved... I mean, Portlandia, The Office.
Yeah, they're kind of choice creds, you know? And yeah. Like, I, again, not to, like, shit on people who have worse... You're working on weirder shows. I worked on the worst shows, like, in Canada. I worked on, like, a kid's cooking show in Canada. You know, like, jobs that were so depressing, I just couldn't answer the phone when they called, and I'd get fired, you know, because I was so bummed out about it. And
your manager, before we left, was telling you, you have to start bucking up in your Canadian meetings, because you walk in there, and
what was the show?
Little Mosque on the Prairie.
Little Mosque on the Prairie, and they called my agent afterwards and was like, they said you didn't want the job. And he's like, did you want the job? I'm like, no, I didn't want that job. You know, like, but he's like, look, grow up. What other job is there in the country this time? And I was like, oh, you got a point.
Yeah.
So I definitely have my share of experiences doing jobs I'm not happy with, and I'm trying to now, you know, what is the American, there's no second acts in life or whatever, who said that?
American life.
There's no second acts in America. It's like, no, yeah. It's such bullshit. American life is a second act, because it's a nation of immigrants who've come here.
Right, right.
With all this fucking backstory, and like, you know.
And is the old country done? Like, do you have a toe left in it? I mean, it seems like it's just such a night and day experience of it's been so overwhelmingly positive for you here so quickly.
The only time Graham ever talks about going back to Canada, he's like, let's become political speechwriters and go back to Canada.
No, but that's not true. I have a development deal at Teletoon. It's been going on for 4 years with like 2 other writers who, you know, it's been going on for 4 years, and I know things are a little complicated at Astro Media, so...
Probably take your credits to Canada and, like, write your own ticket and, like, create your own shows.
Well, I mean...
That spends really well in Canada, like, American...
It does, but, like, you know, if that were really the case, then Canadian television would be full of people who've hit a credit as a story editor or staff writer down here and come back to, like, reap, you know, what they've sown. But if you look at Canadian television, it's not a lot of that, actually.
And it's not so good
either. Yeah, I mean, like, I think the best show in the last bunch of years was, like, still Trailer Park Boys, and those guys are not American. They have no American credits, you know, like that.
Yeah.
It was an excellent show, and it wasn't about that, you know. Like, so Canadian TV is still kind of based on, like, is this right for our market? You know, they have their own concerns that are... You can't just come back and bully them into making a show unless you're Lorne Michaels and it's Kids in the Hall and it's 1980, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, like, not really since then has that happened. Ken Finkelman, maybe. Yes, probably Ken Finkelman. But he's also, like,
but
really
good. What were those credits? I don't even understand.
Ken Finkelman worked 1 day on The Simpsons. And, like, I know a lot of guys I've met a lot of guys who were there.
Didn't he write Airplane 2?
He directed Airplane 2? I don't know.
Wasn't he involved with one of the bad Madonna movies?
I think Finkelman is, like, amazing. I think you have to give him credit. He arrived at The Simpsons, and everybody, this is the story I've heard from, because there were like 20 Simpsons writers at the time, and people were like, oh, you're Canadian. I'll tell you the time I was on The Simpsons, and this Canadian came in. We're all panicking. Oh, this show's falling apart. The show's falling apart. This Canadian guy's going to come in and save us. And he arrives, and they do this thing where they did every morning where they read the newspaper and riff about the news for like 2 hours. And they're like, okay, let's talk about story. Oh, it's lunchtime. Let's go for lunch. And then at lunch, someone made a joke of like, I don't think the new guy is going to come back. And then he just didn't actually come back. And they got a call from his agent being like, he's on a flight back to Toronto. He is not the right fit for him.
He did one morning at The Simpsons.
But everyone's like, good for him. You know, like the guy who I think got his job is Rich Appel, who currently runs Family Guy. And he's like, God bless that guy. He was my entry point into television writing. Because he created a spot that I took. And
it all worked out well, though, because Finkelman made Foolish Heart.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I
that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I'm still a huge fan of. I've got a copy of the scripts from the newsroom up on the shelf there. And
no,
I think
there were like five good episodes of that show. It's true.
No. I think there were
until the Fellini thing.
I even liked the Fellini thing. So all I wanted to see on Canadian television was somebody enjoying themselves, and like, thank God, it wasn't just like somebody like just fearfully connecting the dots and trying to bring a big tent show to the CBC. It was like the real mission statement of the CBC, which is like to make like arts programming.
And,
it felt like a public broadcast for that moment.
I feel like he broke some sacred things about comedy. I don't care if you laugh anymore. It's not important to me that this is funny.
And yet Louis C.K. does it to this day, and people like want to give him every award they've got.
Yeah, but it's good when he does it.
I liked it. At the time, I watched Louis C.K. and I love that Louis show.
I can't argue with you. That show was like the first season, anyhow. Of The Newsroom was uncompromising, one person's vision,
and
very strange and
beyond the kind of demand for like a joke per minute. I think that like you watch Louis and you're like, he's doing that again.
And yes, he was ripping off Larry Sanders, but he was ripping off Larry Sanders before everybody else ripped off Larry Sanders.
Yeah, exactly. I
was the first to rip off Larry Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of shows around that era that were just like. The problem is, if you're really different, you get compared to the other thing that was really different. But if you're just the same, you're like your own thing. You know, like, that's the problem. Like, people compared Arrested Development to the Royal Tenenbaums at the time. And people were like, oh, what a ripoff. And it's like, no, let's just be grateful for two good things. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, like,
And then with a few years' distance, it's like, does that really offend you? The
right,
like,
it's the
almost immaterial similarity between
the
Royal
Tenenbaums.
Yeah, like,
talk to your parents about Donovan and Bob Dylan, and they have problems, but, like, listen to Donovan, he's great. You know, like, who cares, right?
I thought you were going
to
say Dylan, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan's fine, too.
Dylan's okay.
No, but Donovan is, like, at the time, ridiculous. In hindsight, terrific.
To revisit some Donovan.
You should get back into it.
It's
relatively fresh.
He did one good song called The Season of the Witch.
No, he's got like
Hurdy
a great...
Gurdy Man.
And Hurdy Gurdy Man.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
So guys, like, what is your life like here? Who do you know? Are they all... Like, I live in a world where I know, like, people who run restaurants and school teachers and people in politics and journalists and et cetera, et cetera.
Do we know famous people?
No, exactly.
Do you know
normal people?
Do you know anyone who doesn't work in the industry or aspires to?
Oh...
So let's. This is like the new. Do you have any black friends? Do you have any friends not in show business? Like, you know, you know a chef. You're friends with a chef. You know. Let me dig. I definitely have had coffee with something.
No, I thought you were asking me that. I was like, I don't know any chefs. I wish I did.
You do know a chef.
Who? Yeah. Oh, Dave is a chef.
You see,
yes, the chef.
But he's also like the husband of
Dave
a person in the business.
Oh, okay.
Like, so no, he doesn't really count because as much as he's
you
my
gotta
friend,
you got to count it somehow. I'm just saying.
My accountant is an accountant.
You live in a world where everyone is here to try to succeed in the entertainment business.
I met an oceanographer once, and I was like, Georgia's wife from The Life and Times of Tim.
Yeah,
I was like, she's an oceanographer. We should be friends with her because she knows about the sea. The sea is a troublesome place right
now.
And
you never pursued that friendship.
Okay, notwithstanding the spouses of people in the industry, it's probably safe to say that
it's mainly people who are all... Because it's an all-consuming thing. Like, that's the thing about being down here is that, you know, you're either working all the time or... Or you are...
It's like when you move to a new town and you're to go to a university in that town. The first 4 years you're there, you just know people in the university.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're living in the dorm, you're going to the class, and you're basically in that world.
LA's the biggest dorm.
That's not to say that you're not going to get past that. But for the first 4 years, which we're still year three on, you're going to encounter mainly other people going to the same school you are, experiencing the same things you're experiencing. Because that's where you pick people up most organically is through your vocation or whatever.
And that's how also you become like, you know, it's an awkward thing to do to move to a new city when you're in your early 30s. When, you know, like Toronto, I had all of these friends because I was making wild friends in my 20s. When you're in your 30s, it's more difficult to like entreat somebody into being your friend.
Look at this little defensive corner that I've painted you into. I'm so sorry. No, it's totally natural. And, you know, it's an interesting thing too, because I think in Canada, there's just so few chairs at the table.
Yeah.
And
so little food at the table. Like, it feels here like you can kind of have all of your friends have very similar ambitions to yours. And
no one feels like, I mean, of course you're going to feel competitive because it's, you know, people feel competitive, but you don't
in
feel
a more
like,
general sense, but
yeah,
not
you don't
in a
like
if you
you're
get
you're stealing
it,
my sandwich and I will have no sandwich.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few times where you know, a female writer friend of mine has like sold a show or gotten staffed on a show, and I've gone, oh God, why wasn't it me? Like, usually I'm like, that's amazing. I'm so happy that they're succeeding. Like, I feel like my pettiness, and like, I'm a naturally very petty person. I feel like I'm not as petty as I used to be, because there's more food to go around here than there was in Canada.
Yeah. Is this accurate in Canada? Between all of the different broadcasters, there may be three slots for a new half-hour comedy in a particular season.
Mm-hmm.
The slot exists before the ideas and the pitches.
Yes, and here there are 40.
And everybody is fighting for one of those. Every comedy writer in Canada is in absolute direct competition with one another for one of those slots.
Yes.
Here, there are
40 people to sell to.
Yeah, and no one's really counting how many slots there are. There's just perpetual need for stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just about, like, everyone's generating the best ideas they can and pitching them around. And
yes.
Yeah. And, you know, you can get paid at stages that are before it airs, right? Like, that's a big plus, is that, like, the R&D department here is really quite sizable. But if you sell a show in Canada, they're kind of banking on making it because they, you know,
they've already put some money into it, so that
they got to go all the way.
It's like, if you look at, like, the, you know, the numbers. So, you know, last year Fox bought 90 shows. You know, they sent 17 to pilot, and 3 of them got series orders, and 1 of them was given a second series order.
But 90 people made a year's salary.
Yeah, but 90 people made a really decent amount of money.
And people buy homes based on stuff that never
gets broadcast.
You can
have an amazing career in this city having never actually made anything that got on the air.
Yeah, people have retired, you know. Like, yeah. And if you retire, especially to like a small town,
you're fine.
Isn't that totally depressing, though? And, like, is there some part of you that kind of wants to, like, reverse back on it and go, like, indie internet and, like, fuck it. Like, we want to reach an audience and
I don't know.
That moment could come, but, like,
I feel you're like, too embroiled in it. Like, it's real. You've sold stuff. You know, like stuff happens. It can get made. Why would you make it in your backyard?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you're also compensated so well for almost getting something made that it's like, it's a reward in and of itself.
Yeah. Grown ups and working for a living, too.
And if you just keep selling and keep at it, like, you know, the law of averages states that you will eventually get something on the air. And I mean, that's what I'm banking on. I feel like the one good thing about being in Canada for as long as we were is that we don't believe in the idea of the overnight success or the idea that we are entitled to everything on our first shot. Like, I'm so happy to just, like, continue to take shots on net and hope that my 17th shot on net is going to actually go to series. But, like,
or you know, just get, like, you know, staffed. And it's like, staffing is like, people talk a lot about, like, getting a show of theirs on the air. But staffing is, like, an immensely pleasurable experience.
Because you get an episode of you get your own episode of television on the air within
You know, forget even your own episode. You're contributing to every episode that gets on the air. Yeah. And it's like,
so this is, like, staffed in a writer's room. So you're sort of part of, like, a brain trust that contributes jokes to every episode.
Yeah, and you're,
episode.
Like, watching the show, and you're like, oh, that's my line. You know, it's nice. It's like, I wrote this scene. You know?
It's a real break from the solitude of a lot of writer, you know,
in the reality
writer's
of, like,
life. Like, you get to actually collaborate.
Well, I mean, I got into writing because I thought I could stay home all the time, and I generally have gotten jobs that have kept me for 12 hours a day, but I've been very pleased to be in those rooms because it's all full of, like, great people, you know. And so even if you don't get your own show on the air and you bounce over to, like, staffing on a show,
that's fine too.
It's also
that's a great,
it's kind of like actually super great, because
it's a great fate.
It's all of the, like, creative party times without any of the responsibility. You know, there's some responsibility, but you're just sort of throwing stuff in the air for some person who's got the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they can deal with it. It's great. Yeah.
How many of your friends here are Canadians in similar situations to you, like Canadians making their way here?
30% probably. I feel like you hang out with more Canadians than I do.
Well, the thing about it, like, of the, like, the Laugh Sabbath Comedy Collective that I was a part of in Toronto, I think are close to half are now living here.
Is there, like, a shared sensibility? Is there something on the artistic side of it that's, like, a united?
Yeah. I think a lot of, like, especially Laugh Sabbath, which is, like, a group of friends who had primarily an aesthetic about what they wouldn't do about comedy in common. Which is, like, you know, which is a big thing with, like, if you look at the Kids in the Hall or Mr. Show, they weren't. It wasn't that every sketch was amazing. It was about the sketches that they didn't do, about how they wouldn't cross a line, or they always seemed to be on the side of right, even if it was a boring sketch.
Yeah.
So that was the Last Sabbath community people.
And an absurdist kind of a...
Yeah, and sort of like gently moralistic.
Yeah, because you like always talk about comedy ethics and how that's important to you.
Yeah,
and...
Yeah. Yeah, which is like where, like, you know, it was so relieving to be on Portlandia, because you just knew they were never, even if you pitched an idea that was a little on the edge, we always knew that, like, the group filtration system was going to, like, take that stuff out. You know, like, we were going to do a bit about overeager parents declaring their kids as transgendered. You know, like, just like, yes, 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 you know, like, and then being outdone by another parent who declared their kid to be a sub or a dom or whatever, and like put their kids in leather. But it was like a really fun bit, yeah, and fun visuals of like a baby in a leather kind of gimp mask.
Of course.
But we were like looking at articles, and we're like, oh, look at these great families who have like a 12-year-old kid who just like made the gender jump. And we're like, are we making fun of these parents? Like, fuck us. So we just pulled the plug on it, because everyone's just like really sweet. And so, like,
you didn't want to be mean.
Yeah, not, well, you want to be mean to the right people.
Yeah, yeah.
But not mean to like the fucking, these are
super progressive people who are like just providing a safe environment for your child to grow up in.
What that sketch essentially says is that a parent getting involved in gender politics with their kid is a horribly affected hipster.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
not actually what you believe.
Yeah, or we just were like aware that it would be taken, misinterpreted by like people who were anti.
Right, like this is the height of decadence. Look at this.
Yeah,
and you'd actually kind of come all the way around, and your satire of hipsters would be like, oh, like the religious right in Portlandia would agree.
It was a general like challenge with Portlandia, is that everyone understood that like people on the right wing kind of appreciated the show because it's a show about like being critical of your own culture instead of like, let's say, like I love The Daily Show, but The Daily Show is about them, how crazy they are.
Yeah.
And Portlandia is about how crazy we are.
Yeah.
And it's sort of more self-deprecating.
How much Toronto Queen West stuff, like, can you
100%. That was all I just downloaded.
Graham was like, it was so funny to hear you come back from Portland, because he was like, those 10 years that I was in Toronto, I was unsure of how I was going to metabolize that into something that was useful. And Graham basically got to like plunge his 10 years of Toronto, like alt-comedy experience into your Portlandia summer, and you became a really clutch player because you had 10 years of pent up, like the idea of the cred economy, for example.
I don't know if I became a clutch player. I knew I enjoyed myself as a result of being able to like actually, instead of trying to like look around at Portland and be like, what's this like? I was just like, I basically just talked about Toronto and anecdotes about Toronto.
It'd be pretty hard to get like parachuted into a new city and be like, I'm going to make fun of you people.
Yeah, you walk, but you know, like, and I was like, you know, as a fan of Portlandia watching the show, I was like, this is just Queen West stuff all over. But then arriving to Portland, I was like, no, this is a level beyond.
Yeah, they take it further for sure.
Like they have Kensington for miles and miles and miles. But at the same time, it was just like, all of my kind of friends in music and friends in the arts and friends in craft in Toronto, I was just like, here, it's just say Portland, and it's the same. And it really was the same.
It's funny, it's like Trailer Park Boys was so much about the Maritimes and a certain kind of white trash there, but like to any American who watches it, it's their white trash.
You know, you transfer.
It's not that codified. Like there's no, there's not a shorthand for like a Newfoundland type of hick or a Nova Scotia type of hick.
Everyone
like,
makes it
we're
their
all
own.
Hicks. Yeah. Like, like we all understood Fargo because Fargo was a hick, it wasn't a North Dakota.
It was about
type
Minnesota.
Exactly. The first thing he sent me after he got off the plane in Portland for his summer in Portlandia, he left the apartment building that he was staying in, and the first thing he saw, there was three men, and one of whom was playing the funk didgeridoo, another person was playing a little tiny drum kit, and another third guy was doing something in front of a stack of old bicycles that was a sculpture, and it was just on the street. So there was this like funk didgeridoo guy playing a hi-hat in front of a bicycle sculpture, and he was like Portland welcomes me.
I mean, they might as well have had like Naomi Klein's bones like in a saucer for you to like just touch or whatever.
It's like Rob Ford, it's like, what could I do with this but just film it and put it on the show?
I do think that like it's been said a lot often before, but that Portlandia is or Portland is actually about as weird or weirder than Portlandia.
Yeah,
like their best of and their I forget what their now magazine is, but was like best hugger, best beekeeper. You know, like these
the
were
Willamette
like,
Weekly.
Is it? Yeah, yeah. It might be the Willamette Weekly. Yeah. Good call. But yeah, so their kind of like cultural best ofs were like just, you know, like that could have been a bit, but except it was real.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge to like, you know, make it not, to not just like hit record on something and play it back, you know.
Is there a particular like Portlandia character who is a Toronto Queen West character?
The lesbian bookstore couple, I felt like they were, I didn't come up with those existed before me, but certainly they're like, you encountered those guys, and you encountered almost all of them. Like
it's all very familiar.
Kath and Dave, the aggro kind of sports team people who wear multi-pocket vests and talk about their authentic experiences in Spain. You know, I don't think there's much.
That one was funny.
Yeah, like they're still in every season, and yeah. They're like...
Yeah, that couple.
I definitely have met all of those people in Toronto, and that's what makes it, I think, a good show. Is that it isn't actually exclusive to Portland, but you know, and on top of that, as much as it is fun to talk about having written for the show, Fred and Carrie improvise pretty much everything, so it's it's all on them in the end, and they are better at improv than anyone, so.
Like, it's intoxicating, to tell you the truth. Whenever I come here, it's always very exciting. It's like, here's what I'm doing, and here, like, there's always something happening, and, like, things that you're pitching and deals going on, and then, like, stories about other people. And then when there is work, it feels like it's, like, all-encompassing, and it consumes your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, there isn't, like, a sense of normalcy and domesticity.
I mean, we're working towards it, and we find it, you know. There's so much tumult and turnover and change going on a lot of the time here, but we kind of find our little moments, and it's becoming more and more normal. Like, we used to come home every day with like a crazy story of like, oh shit, this happened. I saw so-and-so at the Grove. You know, everything was crazy in the initial days we're here. And as time has gone on, we're kind of a bit more like chilled about it. You know, like you had a pitch to a network today and we're both like, oh yeah, how was that? It was pretty good. We'll see. You know, everything's getting more calm.
Yeah. Does this slowly become like home, or is it just the place where you need to be to do what you're doing?
I was in Toronto for 4 days. The whole time I was there, and as soon as I came back, I was like, I breathed a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
The one breathes when they come home.
Yeah. Back in LA.
Yeah. It's a really weird city to call your home because it is so disaggregated and it's so disparate and it's impossible. You know, like today, like I biked to the pitch meeting that I was going to because I knew that if I was to drive back, it would take, you know, like the 10 mile distance I had to cover would have taken me an hour and a half. Whereas on my bike, it was 40 minutes or whatever. And it's like, it's a really unwieldy city to deal with, but I feel like we've, at least you and me, have grown past the idea of home being a geographical space. It's like home is the place that you have your apartment with your partner, and home is the place that you know that you can get a job in, and home is the place where there
say home is where Graham is. Say that.
Home is where Graham is.
There you go. Home is where I am.
And also, you know that you're at home when you are there.
Yeah.
And I know I'm at home when you are there.
I am the home.
You are the home. I live inside you. We're actually broadcasting this from Graham's insides. From inside Graham's body.
Getting squinchy. So you're not coming home to Toronto.
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
It was never home for me. I lived there.
It was never home for me either. Like, I mean, it was home because I knew you and I knew Sheila and I knew Jeremy and I have my best friends remain in Toronto.
You know, it comes down to, like, you grew up in a bunch of hotels around the world. I grew up in Alberta where the newest building was from the 70s.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of, like,
we both came from places where
going deep for us.
Yeah.
And I think that it is a lot. I've seen people have a hard time moving down here, and I haven't seen that same difficulty from Catherine and I because we just have not really been roots people. Like,
yeah, you're more American in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, Alberta is like, you know, it's all brand new. There's no sense of, it's the opposite of Quebec in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no, like, we are of this place. You know, it's just like, no, we're just here for now. Goodbye. You know, like,
yeah.
My parents don't even live in Canada anymore. So.
I said I miss the people in Toronto. I don't miss the place. I'm not like,
sure,
miss the Drake. It's like, I miss you. Oh. I mean, so, I don't think of you that much.
All right, Hollywood phonies. Thank you.
Phonies. You're welcome. Bye, everybody.
Kim, I need you to make up the sofa now. I'm tired.
All right, that's the show this week. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to email me, you can. I'm at jesse@jessebrown.ca. I'm on Twitter @jessebrown. Did you know that there are videos for Canada Land? You can watch them at canadalandshow.com. I produce this show with Tanara Yelland. There will be another podcast up on Monday. And if you like this show, you should recommend it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.